This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Here we go. We're going to talk about Lindsey Clancy again. I know, surprise, surprise. The prosecution rested in the Lindsey Clancy trial at Plymouth Superior Court after 14 days of testimony. More than 70 witnesses, both sides agree. And that's important to understand here, this case. It's not up for debate. Nobody is debating that she killed Cora Dawson and Callan. She's admitted it time and time again. You don't get that quite often in murder cases where the person on trial says, yeah, I did it. It was me right here. And then 80% of the audience goes, no, it wasn't. Nah, can't be. But that is somehow what's happening here. The fight is whether she was criminally responsible when she did it. That's what we're talking about. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. And we will get to the conspiracy bullshit too. Robin Drake is with us. As always, a retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. There's a lot to get into. Again, the prosecution's first witness. Let's just kind of do a little review here of how we got to where we're at now that the prosecution is wrapped up. Take a little look-see back on the case that they presented and how well they did or didn't. Patrick Clancy was the first witness we saw 14 days ago. He described Lindsey having one of her best days, hours before the killing. Snowman with the kids, photos that she texted him. Then he described months of intrusive thoughts, 13 medications, and a wife he called confusing to live with. Why put their most sympathetic witness first, I guess, is the question. Why did Patrick go on first, and what do you think it did for this case, other than cause a lot of conspiracy theories to begin? Yeah. But more so, what do you think it did for Lindsey Clancy, or not do for Lindsey Clancy, now that that first half of the trial is over?
So let's look at intent. That's what we do with every human being in any situation, is try to understand the intent of the person taking an action and see what their end state is that they're seeking and see what actions they took to support it, because that's exactly what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Because the prosecution is going to act in what they think is their best interest in order to get a conviction on Lindsey. And their claim was that she was not in a psychotic break, that this was premeditated, pre-thought out, planned out, because she wanted to get out of being a mom. She's overwhelmed with being a mom, and she wanted to kill her kids and fake her own death. That is, or fake her own S attempt. So by putting Patrick on first, I can assume, based on they think that's a good action, is that he will, because he had the closest proximity to her, he knew her best, and so he could more accurately claim than anyone else what her state of mind was for months, weeks, days, years, and a timeline of baselining her leading up to the death of her children, his children. And so by doing him first, putting him on first, it establishes that baseline of everything was fine until this. And so this is when she started breaking and cracking. And from the prosecution's narrative, it's going to be because she's overwhelmed with being a mother, not because of mental health or a psychotic break. It was all pre-planned. And then you get into the conspiracy theories. I won't even go there until you want to.
Yeah.
But that's what it is. It's about establishing that baseline for the jury of she was completely normal, acting normal. And if we want to later on get into comparison with Andrea Yates, which everyone's doing, it's fitting exactly the same. Anyway.
So I think it's important for people to remember there is the courtroom. There is the evidence that's being presented within that courtroom. That jury is told not to read social media, not to be watching us, not to be watching TV about any of the coverage of the case. So they, in theory, should not be absorbing the TikTok verse out there of this conspiracy theory of Patrick Clancy, because that's not part of either case, the prosecution or the defense. That's solely in the minds of TikTok users. Let me ask you this. Patrick, they saw him just as everyone else on the planet did. Do you think in any way, shape, or form, I'm not trying to go too far down the conspiracy road here, but it's more so just recognizing that it exists. Do you think any of those 18 jurors walked away from Patrick Clancy's testimony in court and said, I think he did it? The 18 jurors, Did any of those walk away with that theory that is running so rampantly on the internet right now?
No, there's no way. Yeah. And so his demeanor, as we've said before, I've said, as presented before the jury, was kind of a flat effect or affect. And from processing all that he processed, and when describing everything that went on, he had elements of control and trying to compartmentalize from the pain he went through. And I think that was evident. I think the main thing that was very telling that it's not him to the jury is a 911 call. Yeah. His reaction during a 911 call, which we didn't hear it.
No.
The jury heard it, but we saw the result of it, and we heard some elements of what happened and the things that he said during it was completely congruent with exactly as it was described by everyone, and then everything gets supported also by the first responders as well. So, but there's no way in living hell, in my estimation, from being in that courtroom, living sequestered basically from the world of information, would I come to a conclusion that it was him. It would start, to me, it was a good way to pragmatically and objectively, with someone close to Lindsay, start the case, because it was non-sensational. He wasn't overly emotional. It really, I thought, set the groundwork for what the prosecution was attempting to do to establish a baseline that nothing was abnormal in her life.
And I want to get into the 911 call a little bit more when we talk about Patrick, because, I mean, as soon as you have a piece of evidence in this case that seems to really just be non-contestable, it's like, here's what it is. Mm-hmm. And granted, we didn't get to hear it, and I think that's a flaw on the part of the system. We've heard so many 911 calls in horrendous cases. Why we didn't get to hear this one, I don't know. I think it's stupid.
This one statement, I think, helps.
Well, I think if we've been able to hear it, it would help with the conspiracy theories. Maybe that's my opinion, my guess. Not help them along, but more like quash them down, because right now what you have with the conspiracy theories on Patrick and that 911 call, people keep going back to, he said the effing kids.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That somehow that is a statement of his hatred towards his children. And then that is somehow indicative of him being behind all of it, because he said she killed the effing kids. I would probably say the same thing, quite honestly, because that's how I talk. And just for a moment, I don't mean to go too far down the Patrick route here, but I'm going to on this one, since we're already on this angle of conversation. I have been in a life situation where I was with my partner who had postpartum. It's hellish. It was probably some of the worst times of my life, and I'm not the one who had it. I have so much empathy. I can't imagine being the person that's going through it, because your brain's not working. It's functioning in horrible ways, and it's totally fucking with you. And you're believing some of the ways that your mind is fucking with you. Again, it's horrific, and it can totally screw with you. It wasn't psychosis, but it was not good. It was a rough time there. And I never had a partner that threatened the children or anything. But believe me, as the partner, seeing some of the weird things, if you will, or cognitive distortions that that person was coming up with because of what was going on in their brain, it didn't feel all that remotely far off that we could get there, just by ways of talking. So, you know, did those sort of things run through my mind of like, oh my God, what if that were to happen? Yeah, I mean, scared the shit out of me. It never did happen. But I can tell you, if I'm looking at it through Patrick's shoes and trying to understand where he was at, if I had come home and saw that, if that had happened in my world, I probably would have said the same fucking thing. I would have been like, she killed the effing kids. Why be? Not because you hate your kids, but because, you know, there's been a buildup to this for the last however many years in Patrick's case with the postpartum, that he had been the partner of the person for years and knows how scary it could get and how dark it could get. And it's not that crazy of a thing to step back and be angry and be, oh my God, she effing did it. How that it leads and leans into conspiracy of he had something to do with it, I think totally misses the point and misses any sort of understanding or empathy that one may have for what Patrick was going through in that moment in time.
So here's what you do in every situation. We were talking about this before we started, Tony. So as a behavior guy, or actually any investigator, and our audience, you know, as critical thinkers, here's what we do. The first thing you do when you're presented information or you have a theory, let's start with, I have a theory. The first thing the scientific method in critical thinking does, and the way you should be thinking is, it's now time for me to disprove my theory. Let's see if I can disprove my theory. And then if someone else has another competing theory slash conspiracy theory, I will do an attempt to prove their conspiracy theory. Because that's how we maintain intellectual honesty. And so let's do it with the 911 call. My first impression was not, oh my God, he said they're fucking kids, so he must have done it. Because when you do that, what you're doing is you're cherry picking a word, giving yourself the confirmation bias that you're looking for to support your conclusion you have. You're not trying to disprove your theory. You're trying to cherry pick what you want to prove your theory because you don't like him because you don't want to place it on Lindsay. You think the healthcare system's fine, so you're going to place it on Patrick. So now I have a theory. I'm going to keep picking, cherry picking thing to prove the theory. So now here's how you reverse it. And so here's my theory. Let's see what I can do to disprove it. Here's a simple thing you do. Listen to other 911 calls. Boom. What every other 911 call that is made by someone, look, go through our past cases that we've had on this show. I challenge you to do it. Every single one where we've had a 911 call where the person that called in a 911 call either became the suspect, was a suspect, convicted of or whatnot, what's the first thing we hear? Them describing their actions when they arrived on scene. In other words, let's do a thought experiment. If he had been indeed the person had done this, what typically would I expect to hear if he had actually done this and tried to act it and try to stage it? He would call 911 and say, hey, I'm Patrick and I just got back from running an errand and picking up dinner for my family. I walked in the front door. Actually, first I saw Lindsay, my wife, on the front yard. I don't know whether she's alive or not. I then decided to walk in. And so he would give a timeline of what he did, his actions for cover. Every single case we've ever covered was exactly that. What was his first reaction? Holy fuck. And that was the reaction to what he saw. And I guarantee you, here's what's also coming out. And I think his F-bomb he dropped was more about him missing it. That was a guilt coming out that it's his. Yeah. So he's not just angry and upset, shocked, traumatized, but also you're hearing his guilt that he went out and said, oh, F-bomb, I should not have done that. So you're all the emotions coming out at once of the action he's observing, not his participation in it. So that is a huge difference. So disproved right there.
Now, I agree. What people can wrap their minds around and conjecture and go, that's fact. It's really kind of baffling in this case.
Context. When you operate cherry picking a word without context or without analysis, and easiest thing in the world, just compare and contrast. That's it. There's so much data on all these things. I have pages and pages, my own experience of 22 years in the FBI of behavioral analysis, as well as a treasure trove of data that's out there for you to research on your own. Don't listen to TikTok, who's going for the 5-second clickbait highlight reel that's going to get them the algorithm to get more clicks. Go do your own research with an open mind, with the intent to disprove your own theory and try to prove the conspiracy theory. Take an honest shot at it without the confirmation bias. Take in all the, don't cherry pick what you're looking for. Go for the opposite opinion. Every time I do research, I'm saying, what are other experts saying? What's the DSM saying? What's the research say? Deep analysis. These are the things I'm doing so I can get a bigger picture of all these things. That's why I did the deep dive on Andrea Yates today. Oh my God, all these people on that. Do some research. You're not even close.
The prosecution, since we're talking about the prosecution's case, it's now rested. One of the biggest witnesses that they called, Dr. Jennifer Tufts. She prescribed 12 of the 30 medications Lindsay received in 4 months. Throw that sentence out there, and I'm just amazed that people are going to try and argue it of like, well, that's not anything to do with this. On cross, Reddington got her to admit she'd never met Lindsay in person, never accessed records from other providers, and didn't know Lindsay had called the S hotline twice. This is a prosecution witness that came up and said all that. I mean, if we're talking the legal end of things, this seems to be a witness that you kind of got to bring up in a certain way, in a certain place. But I just feel like, I don't know, they didn't, if I'm on the side of the prosecution, which I'm not, but if I were to put myself in their shoes, I don't think the line of questioning and the things I was able to get to be revealed out of that witness would have necessarily helped my case. I guess I'm wondering, do you think the prosecution here, the prosecutor here, the big boat lady, is fully invested in this case as a prosecutor? We've talked about that with Eric a little bit, of because sometimes that happens. Right. Or is this just as confusing and monotonous and difficult to prosecute, you know, as a prosecutor, as it looks, and you're really kind of being asked to take on a Herculean task of trying to prove that something is not what it is, even right. though the medical facts are pointing towards it, and even medicine and science are working against you. The only thing working for the prosecution is conspiracy. They're in terms of facts and science, it's all leaning in Lindsay's Lindsay's corner. How do you think the prosecutor has weighed that? Do you think that they take any of that into account, or she's taking any of that account in this case?
I think, to your first point, I totally think both of them are completely 100% emotionally vested in her being guilty. Mm-hmm. And here's how you know. When you see Lindsay falling apart, you know, completely collapsing herself, you see the testimony from the people, you see absolutely everything, you see all the emotion in that courtroom coming from everyone but the two prosecutors. And so ask yourself, you know, I made that comment on X the other day about, you know, I'd love to see their psychopathy level scale for those two.
Yeah. But,
so let's put my little jest aside there. What makes someone not have an emotional response to something like that? If they think it's an act. And so I believe they're both completely on board, because they think she staged her arrest attempt, and they think Lindsay staged her S attempt, and that it was a flubbed S attempt. So if you think that someone is acting, then you're not affected by their performance in the courtroom. You're not affected by anything, because you just had this abhorrent distaste and negative, huge negative emotions towards that person. So anything revolving around them, you can completely block out. It doesn't bother them whatsoever. And so I think that's the first baseline on that. And I think what they're doing, they're working with what they got. And what they have is shit. The people involved in trying to prove their theory, in other words, they didn't argue, they're not arguing against their theory, they're not trying to disprove their theory first. They came up with their hypothesis and theory that she's a mother that wanted to get rid of her kids because she's overwhelmed and she wanted to quit. And so they're going to work with what they got. And the first person after Patrick, who is what they got Jennifer Tufts. I'm sorry, is that her first name? But it's Tufts. You know, Dr. Tufts. And who do you have to work with on this one? You have someone that was licensed for 1 month, that had like all the things you pointed out, and the things that Kevin Reddington so majestically, you know, hammered her on, was the fact that she was ill-suited to do the job she was doing. But what the prosecution is trying to show, their intent was to say that Lindsay had no problem. She's not reporting anything. It's all on her. There's no issue here. Because look, the psychiatrist says there's no issue. Lindsay's trying to shop for drugs because she's trying to do drugs. I mean, their attempts to try to prove their emotional reaction to things, that she's guilty, so I think and feel she's guilty, I'm going to use what I have. That's why it's landing more on the defense side, because what she has to work with proves the point that this was a shit show leading up to what happened.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I very much fail to see how anyone is getting from, or getting even to, she hated her kids and hated her life and wanted to start out fresh. And this was the method and the lever to get there. Where is the evidence of that at all? Like, there's nothing, not in her journals, not in her writings, not in anything she said to anyone. The only evidence that exists in Lindsay Clancy's history has been, I want to feel better. want to be a mom again. I want to feel something for my children and my family and myself. She was feeling utter numbness, which is scary. And people fall into that. And bless your heart if you've never been there and you're judging other people who have.
And Tony, I want to add one thing on this that shows this parallel that people are ignoring, because I think it's a good time to insert it, and I apologize if it's not. So the whole diagnosis thing that the prosecution's trying to put its hat on, that she didn't suffer a psychotic break, she never sought help, that she wanted to get out of this. So let's compare that. Everyone's saying, well, Andrea Yates was a clear example of it.
Yeah,
Andrea Yates was not diagnosed with a psychosis until the birth of her third child.
Huh.
15 months prior to her actually killing her four children, because then after she was actually diagnosed, it took her three children to be diagnosed. She had postpartum depression, and then after the third, and after her S attempt as well, on the second, are we seeing parallels here that someone says, oh, Andrea Yates is so much different. She was clinically presenting and Lindsay wasn't. No, same exact time period after the same number of children, basically doing the exact same thing. So it took the medical professionals even back then to come up with the same conclusion, took them the same amount of time, and almost exactly. And the same people were standing by her that are standing by Lindsay. And even after that case, they said a lot of work has been done to understand women's health and postpartum psychosis. Really? Then how come we're exactly, for those people who say it's different, how come we're exactly matching it again today?
Well, a lot of work has been done. It's just not a lot of people have accepted it, I think, is the answer to that question. We haven't advanced all that much from witch trial days at the end of the day. As human beings, as visceral human beings, our gut reaction is still burn the witch. It's not ask questions and figure out what actually is happening here. And this is a prime example of it. And it makes you go, 1693 wasn't all that long ago. The prosecution, let's go to our another place in this and give us your thoughts in the comment section about how the prosecution has done so far. Substack, YouTube, drop your thoughts right there.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.